raise your hand if you've been to one of the Acts 29 regional events before and sat in on a session with me, just so I get a sense. It's about three of you. All right, here's what I like to do in these sessions. I don't really teach at these sessions. What I like to do is just kind of get a sense of where each of you are somehow meet some of the needs that you're trying to figure out with regard to the XP role. And that way, rather than me just kind of teaching some sort of prepared lesson or whatever that may hit some of you and may not, we can kind of hit it exactly where we need to be. I did prepare a little bit more today just because the topic of today's regional pre and post launch kind of called for me to do a little more detail than I might normally do. And here's what I'm going to do. I've got some notes prepared. We may or may not get to all of it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass this around. And if you want me to email you notes, you can just jot your name and email address on that. And I'll get them out to you later on. And we'll do it that way. Let's do this first. I want to go around the circle here. And what I'm looking for, just if you just give me your name and give me, if you're in a church right now, what is your role? And then the third thing I need is... what is it that you're kind of looking to gain from this session? And with those three bits of information, I'll be able to guide the rest of our time. Okay? Why don't we start over here with you, Phil?
Phil Henry.
Okay. So it sounds like what we've got is we've got some guys who are new in the XP role, recently taken it on, some in the church planting phase already, some who are thinking about church planting and wondering what the XP role looks like there. We've got some lead pastors who are trying to figure out a little bit more about the XP role so that they can understand how to either recruit somebody or train somebody. I think we've kind of covered the majority of the room with that kind of summary. Let me give you just kind of a quick snapshot of where I'm coming from, just so you can kind of understand and have some context as we kind of have a conversation about some of these things. My role at Terra Nova, as you obviously see, is that it's the executive pastor role. Before that, I was serving as lead pastor in another church, not too far from where we planted, actually. And about 6 months into my role there, came out of seminary, jumped into the lead pastor role, and about 6 months in, I realized this is not my calling. Preaching 45 times a year, whatever, 40 times a year is not the calling God's placed on my life. I love all the other stuff about being a pastor, but when I preach more than 12 times a year, I start to get really antsy and frustrated with that. So for me, if I can preach every 5 or 6 weeks, I'm happy, and then give me the rest of the time to work on, what I sometimes call my real job. So that's kind of what God did in me. And if you're interested in learning more about that, there's an article on Acts 29's website called Climbing Down the Ladder, and you can find that. I had gotten connected with Ed Marcel, who is our lead pastor at Terra Nova, and our worship arts pastor, Scott Womer, and we started planning Terra Nova about 18 months before we launched. And it was pretty clear that this was the guy I was supposed to work with, and the team was coming together. And there were just a lot of kind of God things working out. So we launched Terra Nova in January, full launch of January of 2006. We had met as a core group for about 12 weeks before that. And we had had a couple of vision casting services, whatever you want to call it, earlier in the year. But pretty much our big launch, January of 2006. And we meet in a nightclub. I know some of you guys have been up there for regional events, but we rent this big nightclub, holds about 350 people or so, multi-level, actually very similar to this room, just not quite as wide and deeper. That's worked out great for us. We're on a city block, and then just a few doors down on that city block, we have our office and education space. So we go in on Sunday morning, and we are a set-up and tear-down church, so we walk in, and there's beer bottles on the floor, and beer cans and little lemon wedges from people's drinks, and it's a mess. And sometimes you find puke in the corner, and sometimes you find staff in the corner, and we have
to. Yours.
generally theirs. Although there's carryover between their staff and our staff, so sometimes it does overlap a little bit. The guy who does our sound is also the sound guy for the club, and actually he owns the system, the sound system. And so he's actually a member of our church, and he's great. But at any rate, so that's kind of the setting that we're in. So, you know, when you talk about church planting, one of the big questions is, are you going to be set up, tear down? Which is, you know, very different than having a building. You know, even if you're renting space, if it's yours 24/7, your life is very different. So the first few months of being an XP in a church plant is absolute nuts, to say the least, because part of your role as XP is to free up the lead pastor to focus on preaching, teaching, vision casting, you know, to just so that when he comes in on Sunday, he's not worried that the bulletins aren't there. You know, he can be focused on preaching God's word. He shouldn't have to think about the fact that chairs need to be set up, or that the bathroom smells like death. That should not be his concern. You want to free him up to not worry about those things. So in the first few months of the church plant, it was a little nutty, the very beginning of just all the stupid things you have to do until you raise up a team, because you don't have a team day one. You've got a core group, and some of them are committed, and some of them are onlookers, and you're trying to sort those two groups out. But for the first few months, I would arrive at 6 a.m. Sometimes with somebody, sometimes not, depending on how reliable that person was. Sometimes I helped clean the floors, sometimes not. Oftentimes set up chairs, prepared communion, the bulletin, if it was made the week before, it was made by me. Picked up trash on the street sometimes. I'm not saying I did these things every single week, but many of them. Set up candles, lit said candles, oftentimes served communion, oftentimes did announcements, made sure the kids' area was looking the way it should, made sure there was enough toilet paper in the bathroom, sometimes cleaned those bathrooms, stood at the door and handed out Bibles if there was no one else there to do it, shoveled snow in the wintertime, unlocked the building, you know, your first one there typically. Then you get to the end of the service, and all in there, you're trying to talk to as many people as possible. Helped tear down all of those things that we set up just a few hours earlier. Locked up the building, turned off the lights. Often had lunch with someone, like I was trying to connect with, you know, doing kind of the assimilation thing. And then got home around, left at 5 a.m., got home around 2 p.m., and crashed on the floor and fell asleep. And is it any wonder then that about 3 or 4 months into being an XP in a church plant, I found myself waking up at 5 a.m. on Sunday, and the first thought that enters my mind is, okay, if I can just make it through to 2 p.m., that'll be good. In other words, it's really easy when you're the detail guy in a young church that's getting started to burn yourself out very, very quickly. And so the big warning is just to raise up your team as quickly as possible. Flash forward to today. We'll use a couple of weeks ago. I happened to be the guy who was preaching that Sunday, and I walked into Rev Hall. Revolution Hall is the building we meet in, around 7 a.m. And said to the people that were already there, setting up, I looked around and said, you guys good? Yeah? Okay. I'm going to be in my office, just going over my sermon again. So if you need anything, give me a call. Walked back down to my office, walked in around 20 minutes before the service started, put on my microphone and preached. So that's, now it took 3.5 years to get to that point where, you know, the early months, it's like, you are making sure, whether or not you're doing it yourself, you're making sure that everything gets done. But it takes then a little while. It took about 2 years, I would say, to get to that place where you're finally kind of getting some of those details taken care of, and you're not doing it anymore. Here's what I want to do at the beginning here is take a few minutes and talk about what I feel like are the big picture admonitions to you, whether you are an XP in a church plant, whether you are trying to figure out what it looks like to work with an XP as a lead pastor, or if you're just kind of checking out this role, seeing what it's all about. I think if I had had these things on a wall in my office and read them every day, I probably could have saved myself some stress in the first year, and probably could have made the church more effective as well. So some of these are very practical, and some are more kind of on the spiritual nature. But one is utilizing outsourcing whenever financially possible. What I mean by that is there's no point in reinventing the wheel, and there's a lot of things that you can hire someone else to do. And while when you're a church planter, there's this thought that we're so poor, you know, we're working on funds that we've raised. We've got to do it all on our own because, you know, we've got to save the money. But if you think about the fact that in a new church, you might have two full-time staff people, maybe, depending on how much money you raised. If you can effectively give yourself a multi-staff church by outsourcing certain key pieces to other people, then you can essentially build your team, your paid team, what I mean by that, your paid team, without actually hiring anybody, okay? So, for example, some of the things that we outsourced was web development. We had web people in the church, but we actually outsourced that because we knew that was going to burn out our core, the people that were good on that stuff. We rent Revolution Hall, and then we have this office space where all of our classrooms are, and that's a couple of doors down on that block. And it required a lot of painting and fixing the walls and stuff. And, you know, we talked about, are we gonna have a big painting party, you know, whatever, and get all the core there on a weekend, and we'll knock this out and paint the whole place over a few weekends or whatever. And we decided, no, we're actually just going to contract that out. And so we allocated, you know, like 15 grand and just said, we're going to pay someone else to do this rather than killing ourselves and killing our families perhaps in the process. We said, this is something that we can hand off to somebody else. All of the lawyer stuff involved in church planting, you know, doing your incorporation paperwork, getting 501c3 status, getting your tax-exempt ID, all of these kind of things. You can certainly spend a week researching this stuff online and trying to figure it out on your own. You could do that. You won't do it well. You'll probably screw something up. It's like when something breaks in your bathroom and you decide you're going to try and fix it on your own rather than just calling a plumber. And then, you know, 3 days later, you call the plumber and you spend twice as much as you would have spent because now you've made it even worse. The same is true sometimes with lawyer kind of stuff. Unless you have somebody who is an expert in your church on nonprofit law, you would be best to hire a good lawyer who knows how to do that stuff. In our area, and actually he works all over the Northeast, so you could potentially hire this lawyer. We have this great lawyer named Dominic Brignola. There's a session by him on the Acts 29 website, Dominic Brignola. And he is a lawyer who has helped over 100 churches get started and done all of the paperwork for them. And he also is a pastor. So he's a bivocational lawyer, pastor. And so he sees it from both sides, right? So I hear about this guy, and I call him up, and I say, hey, this is what we're doing. He says, okay, here's what I do. It's $1,500. $1,500, and he handled everything that a lawyer would do. I mean, that's like nothing, right? Processed all the paperwork for us. He had developed a 200-page set of bylaws that he said, the goal of these bylaws are to cover your butt in every situation. He said, read it over, tweak it for your context, for your church. But he said, if you largely adopt these bylaws, these things are legal tight. You know, they're watertight from a legal standpoint. So there, done. That guy's probably saved me 3 months of work, right? For $1,500. Go ahead.
If you said, I'm going to take a week and do it, we need to take our own salary and our benefits and divide that by 50.
Exactly.
And talk about what's our value.
Yep.
How much does it cost the church to divert?
Absolutely.
You can do it well.
And that's the thing, right? Is you take a look at what are you paid in a week? How much is that worth? And then how much is it going to cost to pay someone else to do what you would do? A lot of churches are outsourcing all of their accounting, bookkeeping. There are companies now that will do this entirely for you. We haven't gone that route because we had some people that were very gifted on that. But lots of churches are doing that. I think it's a good idea. There's different, people management things that you can adopt sooner rather than later. So in other words, the more you outsource, the more you can save yourself time. Go ahead.
We're involved in an employee service called TeamLink.
Okay.
And that allows me, for example, to get benefits on health insurance because it gives me the opportunity to join a group. And they also do the big kind of accounting thing that does for tax preparations and for our expenditures for salary disbursements and that kind of thing. So that's, we've benefited from that for the past several years.
Yep. And even if you don't use something like that or outsourcing all of your accounting, even just using Paychex Incorporated or one of the payroll services right away, you don't want to deal with payroll taxes. That's just a mess. So outsourcing. Any questions on that other than the comments I've already made?
When you mentioned benefits, health benefits or?
Yeah, getting health insurance instead of going for a single.
That's one of the questions, if you don't mind. I have 5 children and a wife, and that's one of the key things of church plan that I can't afford it on we'll be making. That's a question I have a lot of curiosity on.
I mean, the best thing to do is Chamber of Commerce, if you can join that locally.
Chamber of Commerce.
Like most cities, most towns have a Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
It's just like where businesses connect. And so it's typically a lot of small businesses, and most churches fall into the category of a small business.
Okay.
And you can buy your health insurance through them. We do a high deductible one because we're young on that. So that's not too bad. This is kind of a big picture. Specialize in being a generalist. And I'll explain that here. A lot of times XPs make the mistake of focusing on a lot of small details, saying that, like, I'm going to focus on these things exclusively, turn themselves into a glorified secretary or a glorified CFO or a glorified small groups leader. In other words, like, you pick one or two things and you spend too much of your time on those things. You become a specialist in a few things. I'm firmly convinced that the XP, when he's functioning well, is a generalist, that he is ultimately working himself out of a job. And that's kind of another big admonition, is just working yourself out of a job. And you do that by replacing yourself, constantly replacing yourself with someone better. So if you're a generalist rather than a specialist, then the majority of what you're doing will probably be done by somebody else better, right? There's going to be somebody else in your church, whether they're a lay person or somebody who ultimately becomes a staff person, who will take what you've done, right, as you're seeking to implement the vision of the church, will take what you've done and take it to the next level. A good example of that at our church is I handled all the budget and all that kind of stuff, working with the finance team. I handled all of that for the first two and a half years of the church. I was the point person on the finance team. I didn't do any deposits or anything like that. I didn't collect money or count money. But I'm the one who was sitting there making the budgets and figuring out those details, handling the insurance, all that kind of stuff. God rose up a leader in our church who happens to be a guy who is a vice president at a local bank in corporate finance. This guy is just a freaking genius when it comes to money and has a real passion for stewardship kind of stuff. And I handed that over to him, and he's taken it to the next level. Now, I was able to do it well when we were a church of 75. I was able to make the transition as we became more like a church of 150. But when we hit 200, I saw the cracks coming through. Like, I knew my general understanding of how to handle a budget and how to handle that kind of stuff is going to start to show through. And I need to get this into someone else's hands who is going to be better at it than me. And then he becomes a part of my team. So I handed that off to him, and he's done it way better than I could do it. So I'm not a specialist in money. I'm a generalist, right? And that's kind of the goal. That's just one example. Questions about being a generalist versus a specialist? Or specializing in being a generalist? Right?
So did you specialize in things for a season until you had somebody, I guess, fill that role, I guess?
Right. So, yeah, I mean, you're constantly implementing the vision of the church, right? Yeah. If you want to bullet point what is the job of an XP, your job is to implement the vision of the church.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that you physically do it all. You see that it gets done, right? And ideally, you're working with a team of people. You're building your key team.
Yeah.
So, there are times when I get something going and then I hand it off to someone else. Here's what I've learned in my very brief years as an XP, is that if I can get somebody else on my team from day one, before day one, then I can hand it off quicker and more effectively, and I get buy-in from that person. So now they're helping me build this new thing, whatever it is. Let me give you an example. We just switched to using a scheduling program for all of our volunteers called Online Planning Center.
Online Planning Center.
.org, I don't know. We knew we wanted to implement this thing for a while, but I knew that I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to take the time to do it because I didn't have time to figure it all out and, figure out how to use the program. So I recruited somebody to take over all volunteer scheduling. And it's just a stay-at-home mom who just loves being organized. And it's just one of those cool stories where, like, she wrote me an email after she'd been doing this stuff for me for a couple of months and said, I always thought I didn't have anything to offer the church. I just didn't think I had a role. I didn't sing well. I don't work with children well. I never knew what my role was in the church. And then you asked me to take over scheduling, and I could not be happier in this role. It's just so fulfilling for me. She's an administrator. She's good at it. It's her passion. She loves it. So she took over all scheduling, and then she implemented Online Planning Center with a little bit of direction from me, right? So in other words, like, I could have specialized in that, but I brought her onto the team first. And the next thing on this big picture admonitions is let things go undone. Just purposefully drop the ball when you need to, if that's what it takes to maintain some level of sanity in your life. It's like, what Mace was talking about. If you're not taking care of your home, the gospel message is not being proclaimed well, right? So we at Terra Nova, we have made a habit of letting things not happen, even when people are coming to us and saying, when are you guys going to start a youth group? Well, when God raises up the right leaders. When he raises up the right leaders, we'll do it. Until then, we're not going to do it. So, letting things go undone.
Can you say more about every member of ministry? Obviously, every member of the church should have some kind of ministry of their own personal beyond just showing up and attending. But I really liked what you said about having this lady about scheduling, but it's often more than scheduling. It's because that implies that people see the need, and some matching of people to need has been done, and now we're just talking about scheduling them. What about, do you have any organized way of recruiting, identifying spiritual gifts, and getting people challenged to get involved in a certain way? And that's just a big black box in all the churches. Because we have all these people coming who represent untapped resources.
Yep.
where it's more blessed to give than to receive. And sure. when they get involved in ministry, they themselves begin to grow far faster than they ever grown before just by attending.
Right.
So how can we bless them by helping them get involved in that way?
There's a few things that we do, and I don't know that we're doing this as good as we could. I think there's probably a lot of room for improvement on this piece in our church. But the things we do right now are that we do membership classes every month, and they're sort of pseudo membership classes, pseudo like get to know Terra Nova kind of class. And in there, we talk a lot about service. You know, we tell people right up front, like, if you're going to be a member here, you've got to be in a small group, because we're very much the organized church. It's like half engineers. It's all very, you know, even though we're artisty, but we're also very engineery. It's kind of a funky mix. We tell people you got to be in a small group, and you got to serve somewhere, so people know coming in, like, if you're going to be a part of this church, you're going to be serving somewhere. We talk a lot about the difference between being monastic and missional. And for us, monastic means, you know, if you're part of the monastery, you've got a role. Does anyone sense an overwhelming calling to set up chairs? I don't know. You know, is that listed as a spiritual gift? Well, service, I suppose, is the spiritual gift. Right, gift of helps. But, you know, not very many people sense an overwhelming calling to set up chairs. So in some cases, some of the jobs just have to get done, you know. Just like you do the dishes at home, you don't necessarily enjoy doing dishes, but you do them. Someone has to do them. But on other areas, I think there are people who really do sense calling to that. And we're small enough still. We're not, you know, we're just hitting 300 on a regular basis right now. We're small enough that we can still kind of identify people within the church kind of on a one-on-one basis or in those classes. That's honestly where we get a lot of our volunteers is through that class, because then rather than me talking to 300 people on Sunday, I'm talking to 10 or 12 people in a room on a Monday night, and I'm finding out where people's passions are. And then something that I do, and I've asked the other elders to do it, is to always keep a list of people that you need, or roles that need to be filled, right? So I have a running list of jobs that I'm hoping and praying for, that someone will come forward. And then, honestly, I just pray about those things all year long. And rarely have I gotten to the end of the year where each one of those roles have not been filled. So I think, you know, a lot of it comes down to prayer, you know. And then as you're praying, saying, you know, God, I really need somebody who can take over managing the facility use, right? That's something I'm praying for right now, is that God will bring me another stay-at-home mom or somebody who can handle all the emails and, you know, signing an agreement when you use the gallery for a meeting, or use the big back room for a meeting. You know, I need somebody to take that stuff over for me. God will bring somebody to that. And then as I'm praying about it, then I get talking to a new couple in the church or whatever. They've been coming for 3-6 months. And we get talking and learn a little bit about them. And then God brings that need to mind, and I just say, I'll pray about that for a little bit. And I start thinking and praying about, okay, is that the person I should ask? And then I go to that person, and I ask, and sure enough, it's the exact fit. I mean, that's how a lot of it has happened, especially for some of the key roles at Terra. But the other thing we do is that when there's like a, let's say we need 5 people for something, you know, Terra Nova kids, we're bringing it up in sermons. You know, we're bringing it up in other places. We're asking our small group leaders to mention it as part of their prayer time, you know. So like our small group leaders will know, hey, the church is really in need of half a dozen people to jump into kids ministry. And let's pray about that as a small group. Well, you know, then somebody in the small group says, you know, I've always kind of thought about working with kids. You think that's something I should do? And then their small group leader is saying, you know, that might be a good fit for you. So now you've got your small group leaders doing recruiting for you. It's great, right? So that's what we've done so far. We'll probably have to formalize that at some point. You know, the bigger a church gets, the more you have to formalize those things. But right now, we haven't had to get too formal on it. Anything else on that?
Another question. Do you all have any kind of agreed upon term of service when you recruit somebody to do something? My experience, yeah, in lots of churches is let's recruit somebody to run the nursery, and we're going to use them in that capacity until they die.
Right.
And that's the only way to get out of that responsibility.
Right.
The result is that after 20 years, they're burnt out, and they're not going to do it again the rest of their lives because they've done it so long without support. And so, do you have any sort of agreed-upon term limits? And how do you support people in roles so that they don't get burned out, being left to twist slowly in the wind, so to speak?
There's a few things we do in that. We don't have a contract, per se, that says, you know, you can get out of this in 3 months or whatever. But we do tell people that we do our scheduling in three-month increments. And we kind of follow a pseudo-calendar, like school calendar almost. Like we go September, October, November, and then December, January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August. That's kind of how we do those three-month increments are our schedule. We found that works for kind of the patterns of people's lives.
You use that for Sunday school too? Sunday school teacher?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got everybody on the same schedule. The band, Terranova Kids, all volunteers, they all follow that three-month schedule. And so, yeah, somebody could jump out of that at the end of that three-month period. In fact, when someone comes to us in the middle of that and says, you know, I think I need to step out of this, if there isn't, like, an overwhelming reason for them to step out of it, we just flat out tell them, like, well, you're going to need to let this schedule finish at least. Like, it's totally fine if you want to step out of this, but, you know, you're scheduled once a month for the next 2 months on whatever setup of some sort. You know, can you give
it out?
Yeah, just finish it out. You know, it's not that much, you know. Happy to take you off in 2 months' time.
Peace bet.
What's that?
It's a peace bet.
Right. What we'll also do is we have kind of two times of the year where we really heavily recruit for any spaces that we're needing to fill within some of the different, you know, aspects of the church. Communion team, greeter, setup, you know, all these different kind of things, cleanup. And when we do that heavy promotion, you know, which just happens during the announcements and to some extent during the teaching time as well, is we say, like, you know, let's say we're talking about Terranova Kids. We're needing four more people for Terranova Kids this fall. If that's a calling you have on your life, if you know that your greatest passion lies with helping children understand God's Word, and you're serving communion right now, once a month, twice a month, and you're saying, I'd love to work with Terranova Kids, but I'm on the communion team, by all means, email one of us and say, or email me and say, I want to get off the communion team and I want to get on the kids team. And we'll say, all right. We'll let the schedule person know that at the end of this schedule, you're off communion and you're going to be on kids. And then they go through the various background process to get into the kids ministry. So that saying that up front several times a year kind of creates the DNA where people know if you want to just try something different, you want to give your volunteer time in a different place, your monastery time, as we call it, by all means, do it. It's totally fine. Just, you know, let the schedule finish. I think generally people at our church would feel like they have the freedom to get out of their role and get into something different. Again, I'm talking big picture admonitions here, so this is not super detailed stuff. Work very closely with your lead pastor. Here I'm talking specifically to the XPs. But for the LPs, you know, budget time with your XP. Work extremely closely with him. This is especially true in the church plant. You know, some of you might end up being XPs in an existing church. But this is especially true in the church plant because you are birthing a new spiritual child. And, you know, what do they say about kids? Like, most of what you learn is, like, learned by the age of six or whatever. So much of the DNA of the church, so much of the makeup of the church is determined in the first year or two. And you, as the key person who is implementing the vision, if you think of it this way, you've got the lead guy, right? And God has called him to be a vision caster. That's part of the role of a lead guy. And he's creating this vision. He's casting this vision. It's being tested with key leaders. It's being refined. And then at some point, that vision is somewhat handed over in a million different ways. With each new ministry in the church, with each new internal ministry, that vision is kind of handed over. And your job now, you're in a very precarious position. You could totally botch that vision, right? You could insert your own ego into that vision. You could decide that you weren't really in agreement with it to begin with, and you're going to adjust that vision. You could do all sorts of things. So you have to be so connected to your lead pastor as kind of the person that you can go to continually understand what the vision is. So especially in the first year or two, Ed and I would spend 2-3 hours a week together just talking through stuff. And anytime I thought I might be off base by implementing some aspect of the vision, I'd go back to him and say, all right, now here's what we're doing. Here's what I'm working on. This is what I'm planning on doing. This is how I'm planning on doing it. This is what I think it's going to require. This is the purpose. Does that sound right to you? And then we'd talk that through. Sometimes it would be, yep, you're dead on. You're absolutely, you know, implementing the vision of the church in an accurate way. Other times it was like, no, I think you're off base a little bit on this one. Okay, help me understand why I'm off base. We spend time talking that through. I come out understanding the vision better. Our lead pastor doesn't spend a whole lot of time with the key kind of deacon-level people in the church, right? Not spending much time with them. He's spending his time with the elder-level people in the church. So, but the deacon-level people are often the people who are kind of implementing the vision, right? So you have to make the vision really clear to them. And the way to do that is to continually, as an XP, the way to do that is to continually spend a lot of time with the lead pastor, continually kind of drinking from the vision, so to speak. And then you'll implement it well. You'll keep things on track. Your message will be focused. The people in the church won't be wondering what it is we're trying to accomplish. It'll be clear to them. So that's kind of a two-part one. Work very closely with the lead pastor and protect the vision of the church as you implement it. Questions on that?
So were you working, so is the lead pastor solely helping to develop the vision? Are you working with him on that?
Yeah.
Providing input? I mean, I assume the answer is yes.
I think every church is different on this, to be honest with you. I think in some churches, I'm not an overly visionary kind of person. Okay, just like vision casting is not something that comes naturally to me. And what I mean by that is that the initial kind of seed, the kernel of the vision, not something I do well. Okay, but what I think I am good at is once that very initial idea is kind of put out there, then my brain kicks into high gear and I start thinking about like how that's not going to work or how it could work or what it's going to require to work. And so then what we call our lead team, the lead team, which is four elders, we then kind of hear that vision and tweak it. We ask a lot of questions. We go back and forth. Sometimes someone else on the team is bringing a vision forward and we're tweaking that together. So it's a collaborative process without a doubt.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm not the idea originator. Not who I am.
Yeah.
Most XPs aren't. Okay. And I would even argue that if the executive pastor is the vision caster in the church, probably shouldn't be the executive pastor. Like if all the lead pastor is doing is just kind of teaching, then he should really be called the teaching pastor.
Uh-huh.
And someone else should be called the lead pastor.
Just
that's kind of my gut feeling on that. Other questions on that? Okay. This is literally just a list of things that I did pre-launch that I think is helpful. Okay. Having a vision-based timeline to your launch date, and I would add through to the end of year one. And I say vision-based timeline because the difference between a timeline and a vision-based timeline is what priorities are making it onto the timeline. Okay, so we mentioned youth ministry. We knew we would have nursery and some kids classes, but youth ministry was not a priority for us in year one because we're a church that is really kind of focused on kind of the indie arts community in our area and the college campuses that are in our area. So youth group for the 22-year-old indie artist, not really a need, right? Now we're reaching a point where we really need it. So it gets moved up in the timeline. But pre-launch to the end of year one. So you've got a timeline. I have a timeline that walk through details like 12 months out, have the beginning stages of website worked out, have 6 months out, have web developer identified and begin having that initial website up and live, begin tweaking aspects of website, all sorts of details related to the whole a million aspects of the church. But you've got that timeline in place, and you're working your way through it. And then knowing that some of those things aren't going to be implemented before you launch, so you continue to implement those things after you launch, because then you start to get a sense of who you actually have in the church. Stop me here as I'm going through this if you want to ask questions, okay? Otherwise, I'm just going to keep going through. Go ahead.
We just had a little back and forth, and one person said, I read a great book that said you can only go on the bridge as you can only build the bridge as you step out on it.
Yeah.
And in one sense that's true, and in one sense it makes me nervous. Where are we building the bridge towards? I don't know what your response would be to.
Well, yeah, and that's the vision, right? So the vision of the church, right, which is you're continually articulating, your lead pastor is continually articulating, right? So we knew that at Terra Nova, who were we trying to reach?
My problem was the lead pastor was propounding this, saying, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, well, then you don't move. If your vision is, I think my dad, who was a pastor for like 40 years, used to say, if there's a fog in the pulpit, no, what is it? If there's a mist in the pulpit, there's a fog in the pew. You know that one, right?
Yeah.
It's old.
Something
I'm sure.
Like that.
Yeah. Just the point that if you're not quite sure up there, the people are even more lost, So you don't move forward until the vision's not clear, right? Incorporation is one that every church has to go through. Pretty much every state has some form of incorporation. In New York State, it's as simple as basically putting together like a few like lists, like 5 or 10 things of what you're going to do. We will meet for worship. We will teach people the Bible. Like, it was like that simple. It was all we needed to incorporate. And then we had to have 6 members to incorporate the church. So we had 3 pastors. We were all married. So the 3 pastors...
3 wives.
Yeah, right.
Only one wife each.
Exactly. One wife each. So we all signed the paperwork. Yeah, yeah. He just said...
You're going to tell us forged signatures.
That's right. Forged signatures. Don't worry about the law. No. So incorporation is the first.
Preaching in chains.
Perfect.
Yeah, there you go.
Tax ID is one you have to go through. Tax ID is just... that's like your social security number as a church. That allows you to get a loan. It allows you to have a credit card so you can rent a car, whatever. That's your social security number. You need that. Tax exempt status, 501c3. This is not, you're not required to have a 501c3 as a church. A lot of people assume you have to have one. You actually don't. There's another way of doing it, but here's the deal. It's such a lot of people that don't know anything about law, believe that you do have to have a 501c3, and enough of your parishioners will believe that you're not supposed to be taking donations if you don't have a 501c3, that you're better off just filing the 501c3 paperwork. So that when someone says, are you guys a 501c3, you can say, yes, we are a 501c3. But there's a way to be under some other aspect where you can still take donations and not have it. But for the extra few hundred dollars and a few more pieces of paperwork, well, just go all the way, be done with it.
You want people to know their tax deductible status for those contributions is going to be honored.
Right, exactly. Which they would be even if you didn't have it, but that's fine. You just do it. The difference between being a 501c3 church and not being a 501c3 church is that you're held to a different standard, is all it is. So, bylaws are something that the state of New York at least requires. And that's where the incorporation is very simple. The bylaws are very lengthy. And I'd encourage you, if you're setting up your bylaws...
Call Dom.
What's that?
Call Dom.
Call Dom. He's your guy. But also just don't think of your bylaws as something that you're going to hand out to all your members. It's not something that you're going to, you know, give everyone a copy to, you know, when they become a member of the church. This is like the document that you keep, that you cover your butt with, and you just... You know, you're not going to take it out and read it on a daily basis. It should be something that when you get sued, you can say, well, actually, we have a policy in our bylaws that says that we don't believe that homosexuals can marry each other and be pastors in the church. So, you know, I'm sorry, but you can't sue us for not letting that guy be a pastor here. Because it's stated right in our bylaws, mm-hmm. we put it in print. It's been affirmed by the government. We're all set. Mm-hmm. That's why you have that kind of stuff. So that's the purpose of our bylaws. Some will use it as almost like this is where we're going to talk about the vision of the church, and that's just not how we use it. In fact, I think I'm the only person who's actually read it in our church. So hello, Yvette. Okay. Let's see. Online giving is when you want to get set up before launch. This has become more and more important just in the last 3 or 5 years. You know, in fact, when we started the church 3.5 years ago, it would not have been considered a requirement to have online giving. Like, it's nice, but it's not required. Now it's like assumed. If you don't have online giving, there will be people in your church that won't give. Like, they'll just forget to, because they pay all of their other bills online. Why can't they tithe online? Mm-hmm. So that's one that's really key. It also, there's been a lot of evidence that shows that it makes your giving more consistent. Because mm-hmm. Some people will set it as an auto kind of deal where it just automatically happens. So mm-hmm. I'd encourage you to get that done before launch. And here's the thing, just a general idea on stuff that you're getting done before launch. Once you launch the church, you're going to be so busy, you're just not going to have as much time for a lot of these details. Mm-hmm. So the more you can get done before launch is better.
Are you doing that through your bank, setting up the online giving?
We actually used, ultimately it is through our bank. The money goes to the bank. But mm-hmm. we used Google Checkout because they have a special deal for nonprofits.
Okay.
It's like a lower percentage that they take out. Everyone's going to charge you something for online giving. There's no such thing as free online giving.
Okay.
They might, 5 minutes, thank you. They might give you free online giving for the first 3 months, but ultimately they're charging you.
Okay.
So, yeah. Website is an obvious one. You know, Facebook, Constant Contact. Constant Contact is an email program that you can use to send out emails to all your people. You can blast out 1,000 emails, and it's going to blast them out as individual emails mm-hmm. rather than 1,000 emails sent from your, you know, mail account, and then 30% of them bounce because they get trapped in spam filters. Mm-hmm. Constant Contact does it in such a way that doesn't happen. You know, Constant Contact is something you'll spend $20 a month on.
What's it called, Phil?
ConstantContact.com. I would encourage you to snag your church name, whatever it is, in every possible web tool you can find. Okay, so we have, and that also includes when you get your website, don't just buy, you know, terranovachurch.org, buy .net, buy .com, probably .tv is one you should get nowadays as well. That's becoming a common one. In other words, you get like the big ones, you know, probably .info isn't really needed, you know, whatever. But get the big ones. Snag your church name as a Facebook group. Snag it on MySpace, even though MySpace is like, you know, kind of 2007. Flickr. Get your church's name on Flickr. We missed that one. That's the one we missed. Ustream.tv. Again, this will all be in the notes. Ustream.tv. We streamed our services live on Easter and Good Friday because we had some people who were in a car accident, and we wanted to give it to them to be able to watch it in their hospital room. And we put it out on Facebook, and there ended up being like 100 people watching it on Facebook or on, you know, online who were in other places. So that was cool. Ustream.tv. Verb is becoming a big one. Twitter, Twibe, getting a Twibe name for your church on Twitter. Gmail accounts, you know, get, like we have terranovachurch@gmail.com, because sometimes you want, let's say you post something where you know you're going to get thousands of responses, it's going to crash your server. So you have a Gmail account set up somewhere that you can use for that kind of thing. WordPress, the blog thing, Google Video, YouTube, Vimeo. We just have a standard operating procedure at Terra Nova where anytime somebody discovers a new online tool that requires you to have a name on it, just sign up for the account for Terra Nova right away before anyone else can. Because that way, not that you're trying to take stuff from other churches, but you want to protect your brand. And some people don't like to talk about branding as a church, but the reality is if you don't brand your church, someone else will. So you might as well do it, right? You get that stuff quick, and then no one else can take it. I actually have Terra Nova Church trademarked in New York State because I didn't want someone to open up Terra Nova five towns away and people get us confused. And then they decide to multi-site church, and we're not. So now I've protected it, right? So if you're in New York State, sorry, Terra Nova's taken. You won't be able to set up Terra Nova Church in New York State. But it's a simple thing. It cost me $300 to trademark it. So you want to have a pre-launch budget relatively fixed based on your church planting support and what you think your launch team is going to provide financially. You want to have a first-year budget. Some of this stuff, actually, you'll have to do when you file your government paperwork. Some predictions for a second and third year. You want to have your payroll set up, bank accounts, credit card with at least one card that has large purchasability. Like you want to be able to drop $20,000 on a credit card because sometimes you'll have to, ordering equipment or something like that. Insurance, property, casualty, even if you're renting everything, you need insurance on the property because if someone gets hurt, they can sue you. We've already been sued once. We're only 3.5 years old. So, you know, it's a pain. Location negotiations, figuring out where you're going to rent. You want to have things like a printer contact set up who can do all of your big printing stuff. And then when you move 6 months from now, your mailing address doesn't change, you know. Little things like that can really save you some headache later on. Branding, building your team of key contacts. I'm running through this quickly because the time is short. Key volunteers in place, such as kids, finance, service volunteers, greeters, communion, setup, teardown, small group leaders. Think through the guest experience from start to finish, especially if you're in rented space. Can people find you on the street? Is there a street sign? You know, you're renting a hall. Do you have sandwich board signs made up? Where are people going to know where to park? When they walk in the building, is it obvious where the bathrooms are? We set up all kinds of signs on Sunday to direct people around to where they need to go so that when the guest comes in, they know where to go. And we have pictures of those signs on our website so that when someone goes to the website first and then they plan on coming and visiting the church the next day, they've got a visual. Oh, yeah, I saw that sign on the website, right? So it kind of tie it all in there. Where am I? Develop relationships with other XPs locally. That'll just help you to have some key people you can go to with questions. Someone you can just call up who's 20 minutes down the road. If there's another mega church in your area, they probably have an XP, and he probably doesn't get that many calls from other XPs, just generally the way it works. Everybody calls the lead pastor, and the worship pastor. Okay? Those are the two rock stars in the church. People generally aren't calling the executive pastor. So you'll find that you can call up an executive pastor in a church of 5,000 people and say, could I do lunch with you next week? Yeah, sure. That'd be great. He's going to be totally fine with it, right? So that's easy. Build those relationships. Develop promotion strategy, especially in pre-launch. Rudimentary registration system. You know, how are you going to handle stuff as people sign up? You might want to eventually go with something like wufoo.com for registration. Post-launch. Almost all the things that I mentioned above are going to continue to be in development post-launch, and you're just going to start improving things. Building out teams, identifying key leaders, church management software, systems development. Here's what you do with systems development. You take your launch number, right? Let's say you've got 60 people in your core team, okay? You take your launch number and you double it, and you build all your systems with that number in mind. So when Terra Nova launched, we built all of our systems with 150 people in mind. That was our idea. Well, not that we thought the church was only going to grow to 150, but you can't build a system for 500 when you're 75 people. It's just awkward and odd. You know, it's like some, you know, it just is dumb. So you build it with that in mind. When you start to reach about 75% of that goal, then you start to redo all the systems to, you know, double that again to 300. Listing the church everywhere on the website, things like Church Angel, Relevant Magazine, findthechurch.net, those kind of things. Developing leadership systems, looking ahead to future sites, shoring up key leadership roles, developing kids ministry more, security procedures, just a million things here, and I think I hear them starting down there, so I'm gonna cut this off so you guys can get to the next session.
Are you gonna email this?
Yeah, I will email it.
This has been tremendously helpful.
Good.
I really appreciate it.
I agree.
That.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I've got a whole other page.
You read this whole thing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I've got a whole other page of stuff that I did in the first.
Just email it to us.
So I'm gonna email it to you, and you guys are welcome to shoot back emails. Totally fine with that. All right?
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate your time.